teach on a topic on vision. And it just really spoke to me and really made me think about some things and focused me on some things that probably was a good time for me to hear it. And just kind of had planted the seed in my heart and took his idea and worked on it and developed it and turned it into hopefully my sermon. But I'll tell you that up front, and I'll say this: if there's any good, you can give him the credit, and I'll take the blame for whatever's wrong. How's that? We'll go at it that way, and that covers me. So I'm telling you up front where my idea this morning came from, and you'll notice on the screen that it is a work in progress. That the title I've put on the screen is not what you have on your bulletin. When Lane came in this morning, I was back there at the back on the computer, and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm deleting my sermon." What was about six or seven slides for a sermon has turned into one, I think. Which is good. Really short sermon. The problem is I got an hour and a half introduction. That's the problem this morning, because to get you to where we need to be, I got to give you a lot of history, a lot of background, kind of tell you a story, really the story of Nehemiah. Unfortunately, the story of Nehemiah isn't that simple. You think, well, that can't be too bad. He's in the sixth chapter, so he's going to tell us five chapters of the history of Nehemiah. Well, unfortunately, the history of Nehemiah begins back in the book of Daniel. So we got to go back about 150 years. I give you 150. Hey, if I can tell you 150 years of history, an hour and a half, I did better than any history teacher you ever had in school. I promise you that. They take a whole semester. And so I need to give you about 150 years of Jewish, Babylonian, Persian history. So 150 years of history of three different countries in an hour and a half. Deal. That's not bad. You'll still be home by supper. That shouldn't be too bad. But kind of the background of the story, and there's really one verse I want us to get to, but it'll make no sense without the history that goes behind this story. Where we pick up here in Nehemiah chapter 6, and I'm going to start in chapter 6, and I'm going to go back to the book of Daniel, and then I'm going to work my way back to chapter 6. So I'm actually going to tell you the history twice, I guess. And so 300 years of history in an hour and a half. That's a real bargain. And all for free. So here we go. In this chapter where we pick up in Nehemiah, Artaxerxes, and some of you may have heard that name, is now the ruler, the king of Persia. Persia is the world power at the time. They are the dominating power, as there is throughout history. There's almost always one power that kind of dominates every other nation. It's kind of the big dog. And so, and around 444 BC, he is the king of Persia. And Nehemiah was his slave, servant, whatever word you prefer. He was there in the court of Artaxerxes, and his main job, according to the Bible, was a word called the cupbearer. Now, I don't know about you, but for most of us in the society, when I hear cupbearer, I think of Artaxerxes sitting on the throne saying, "Hey, give me a coke." And here comes Nehemiah running with him a cup. No, that's not really a fair picture of the cupbearer. Nehemiah would have probably been much happier with that job, because what it meant to be the cupbearer was that when Artaxerxes said, "Hey, bring me a coke," and somebody came running with that cup, Nehemiah had to drink out of it first to make sure that it wasn't poison. When Artaxerxes said, "Hey, bring me a pack of crackers," Nehemiah had to eat the first cracker in order to make sure they weren't poisoned. So really, for our terms, a better term for Nehemiah's job is to say that he was the food tester / taster. So it was his job. He ate, and if he didn't fall over, Artaxerxes said, "Pass me some." So that was Nehemiah's job. Now, Nehemiah is a Jewish man who is there in Susa, the capital of Persia. And he is there because of an event that happened about 150 years ago. In all likelihood, Nehemiah had never been to Israel. Better than average chance, as far as we know anyway, he had never been to Israel, never seen Jerusalem, had really no idea about his homeland other than what had been passed down through the generations, what he had heard from other people. And he is serving there because, again, about 150 years before this, the Babylonians under the leadership of Nebuchadnezzar had overrun Israel. And you may know parts of this story. Nebuchadnezzar had came in several times. He'd kind of threatened Jerusalem, but they kept kind of rebelling. And finally, Nebuchadnezzar came in, and he overran Jerusalem and just destroyed the city, just wiped it out. I mean, he didn't pretty much, there was nothing left standing. He tore down the temple. He tore down their houses. He tore down their walls. It was just a disaster zone. Well, one of the other things he did that was his practice is that he gathered up the best, the brightest, the youngest, the smartest, the prime candidates to take back to Babylon. In that group were four that you probably remember their names. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Daniel were in that group and others. And he took them back to Babylon to begin to train them. We talked about that passage several weeks ago, actually, where Daniel and the three Hebrews refused to eat the Babylonian food. Well, about 50 years after Nebuchadnezzar overran Jerusalem, then Cyrus from Persia comes in and he takes over and he conquers Babylon. And when he comes in and he conquers Babylon, one of the first things he does is he says, I don't need all these Jews. And so he turns the Jews loose. He removes their order, he removes their bondage and allows them, for the most part, to go free. Now, they all didn't go home. Some, probably like many of us would be, said, you know, hey, I've been here all my life. Got a house here, got a job here, my kids, my grandkids are here, I'll just stay here. You know, I don't need to go back, I'm good. Many of them did go back to Jerusalem and travel back. But Cyrus kept some of the Israelites there as servants. Well, eventually Cyrus passes on, and Artaxerxes is now the king. And so that's how Nehemiah ends up serving in the palace of Artaxerxes. But the Jews who had been released, who went back to Jerusalem, what they found after, you can only imagine, after 150 years. Take, for example, if we were to say New Orleans, when the hurricane came in there and pretty well wiped everything out, destroyed everything, you can imagine what it would look like after roughly 150 years of nothing being done, of no work there, no one cleaning up, no one rebuilding, the looters coming in and out, the animals, just the natural decay of 150 years. And so Jerusalem is a, you know, it's a war zone. I mean, literally, it's a war zone. It is a disaster zone. When they go back, and they go back, and they begin to try to rebuild their city. I mean, it is a home for them. It's where they're from. It's where their ancestors are from. Many of them had never been there before, but it was home. It was where, again, they had heard about Jerusalem all their life. And so they go back, and they begin to rebuild their homes. They begin to rebuild the temple. They begin to rebuild businesses. They begin to rebuild some semblance of life. Now, there was kind of mixed emotions among their neighbors. Their neighbors were kind of fond of the idea of the Jews rebuilding stuff and reestablishing some things and reestablishing business, bringing some money in there because they didn't have a wall. And so ever so often, their neighbors would look around and say, hey, we want that. And they would go to Jerusalem and they would take it. Jerusalem was kind of their backyard. They just kind of used it as their playground. When they wanted something that they had in Jerusalem, they just marched in and took it. Jerusalem, they didn't have an army. They didn't really have any way to defend themselves. And so they just pretty well, you know, they'd come through, and if they decided, they'd kick over your house. I mean, they just, you know, and there wasn't much you could do about it. Well, the Jews decided we need to rebuild our wall. Well, you can imagine trying to rebuild a wall from scratch when somebody's against it. Because here's the problem. You go out there today and you have a really good day's work and you get, I don't know, 50 block laid. I don't know how many block a good brick mason can lay in a day, but you get 50 block laid and you stand back and you go, looks good. We did good. We did build another 50 tomorrow. Well, you go in, you're tired, you lay down, your neighbors come over and go, I don't like that wall, and kick it over. You know, and that's what was happening. They just were getting nowhere on the wall. Every time they'd get a little progress built on the wall, they would come in and knock it down. They would come in and attack them while they were building it. They would come in to their gardens and pick their gardens for them. They would come in and burn their gardens, burn their houses, just whatever they wanted to do. They were schoolyard bullies. I'm trying to find an image that many of you know, we're not really used to that kind of way of living, but you get an idea. The neighboring cities, countries, they just come in and slap Jerusalem around. They were the weak little brother or whatever, and they just come in and knock them down, take their stuff, and go on about their business. And the other thing was, they didn't want them to rebuild that wall because, listen, they knew history too. And they knew what Jerusalem had been in times past. And so they didn't want Jerusalem to rebuild their wall and get kind of arrogant and get, some self-pride, rebuild their army and decide, you know what? We need a bigger city. We want to take over your city now. You've been beating us around, punching us around. We're going to come over there and we're going to knock you down for a while. We're going to take your city. And so they said, as long as we can keep them humble, we can keep them, as long as we can keep them poor, we can keep them humble. And so they every time they'd try to rebuild the wall, they would knock it down. And they'd come on, beat them up. Well, this goes on for years. And again, the Jews were to the point where they didn't know any different. There was probably not a Jew in the crowd who had ever lived in Jerusalem when the walls stood, when they had any kind of pride in their city whatsoever. You know how we are about, we're American, we are Americans, hear us roar. They didn't have that. We're Jews, watch us crawl. They just didn't have any pride at all, and their neighbors liked it that way. Well, Nehemiah's back in the palace. He's going about his business, and, he's kind of curious how things are going. My people have went home. They've been there a while. Wonder how things are going. And so one day, and listen, this is not the King James Version. If you're trying to follow along, this is not the King James Version. This is the James David Version, okay? I don't use thee and thou. So one day, Nehemiah, traveling salesman, comes along, and he asks him, he says, how are things back in Jerusalem? Salesman says, man, you wouldn't believe it. He said, it's terrible. And he tells him basically what I've told you, that every time you turn around, they come down, they knock down the wall, they take their food, they beat them up, they do whatever they want to, they knock down their houses, they're pitiful. They work and they build something up and the neighbors come along and knock it down. And when Nehemiah hears that, he is just overwhelmed. He cries, he's brokenhearted, and he just doesn't know what to do. And so one day he's in doing his job, and the king sees him. Artaxerxes looks at him and says, Nehemiah, what's wrong? Now let's understand one thing first of all. At that time it would have been illegal for Nehemiah to look troubled in the presence of the king. That could have cost him his life. But Nehemiah has already looked troubled and caught the king's eye. Well, not only does he look troubled, then he goes on to tell him his troubles. He doesn't say, I just stepped on a bumblebee or something. He tells him his problems. He says, King, here's my problem. I've got word back from my home that, man, they're in bad shape. It's falling in. He told him the same story that I told you and the salesman told him. And he says, you know what I'd like? I'd like to have a little time off to go back and rebuild my city. Second problem, slaves don't get vacation days. Now, I don't know what you know about slavery, but slaves don't ask for time off. But Nehemiah says, I need some time off. Well, I'm sure that everybody else standing in the palace went, he's a goner. Who's going to be the next cupbearer? And so the king, surprisingly, says, I think that's a good idea. Then you could really hear people going, you could hear the air sucking out of the room. And he says, you know what? Not only am I going to give you the time off and let you go back, but I tell you what I'm going to do. I am going to make you the governor of all Judea. I'm not just sending you back. I'm going to send you back with the authority to do something when you get there. You're going to go as my appointed official delegate governor of the whole region. Not only am I sending you back, not only am I sending you back as the governor, but then he does something really surprising. He reaches in his billfold and says, you know what? I'm going to buy you the stuff you need to rebuild the city. Now you talk about hearing people go, gasp in the palace. Yeah. I'm going to let you go. I'm going to give you authority. And I tell you what, take whatever you need. Here's some money. Here's some building supplies. You gather it up. You go back to Jerusalem. You rebuild the city. You rebuild the walls. Now, think about what a magnificent thing that is. Artaxerxes is in effect saying, you go back and you build a city with walls around it that could actually potentially be a threat to my kingdom. But that's what he tells. And he has one stipulation. Some of you say, I knew there was something. Don't get nothing for free. Yeah, there was one stipulation that Nehemiah had to work. Anybody know what that stipulation was? He had one thing. Artaxerxes only asked one thing in return. You know what it was? When the project was complete, he says, you can't stay there. You have to come back to Persia. You have to come back to serve me. Nehemiah looks at that and says, deal. You're going to make me the governor. You're going to give me the money I need to restore my homeland. Deal. It's worth it. So Nehemiah gathers up everything he has, gathers up all the stuff and the supplies and all the things that Artaxerxes is sending back with him, and he goes back to Jerusalem. The sight he sees defies description. Nehemiah he thought it was bad when he heard about it. You know, when he saw Jerusalem, he was just absolutely devastated. I mean, he was just overwhelmed by what he's seen. The city again, it has been run over by the neighbors. It has been devastated by warlords. It has just, you know, like Babylon didn't destroy it bad enough. Now the looters have been there. It is just a ramshackled tent village, practically. There is nothing there. And so, when Nehemiah arrives and sees this mess, he says, man, I'm going to have to take a day here, and I'm just going to travel around, and I'm going to look at the city. I'm going to look at what's going on here. I'm going to see the problems. I'm going to talk to the people. I'm going to assess their attitudes. I'm going to see what our main problem is. You know, where I need to start, you know, you can imagine that. What is my first project? You know, where do I start in this mess? You ever had that problem? Maybe you walked out and he's going to clean out your garage or something. You walked and went, where do we start? You know, that's kind of what Nehemiah has. He walks out and he goes, where do we start? And so he walks around and he looks, he spends a day. And he understands, he comes to the conviction, he says, I believe the number one, listen, the economy stinks, the national attitude, pride stinks, job situation is bad. Everything here stinks. And Nehemiah probably pretty well come to the conclusion, there is not a redeeming quality here. Thank God Artaxerxes said I had to come back to Persia. You know, he was probably just overwhelmed. But he comes to this conclusion. He says, the number one thing, if I don't get anything else done, my number one priority, my number one job, the thing I must do is I must lead the people to rebuild the wall around the city. Before the economy, before a hospital, before anything else, we must rebuild the wall. And so Nehemiah sets out to cast that vision among his people. Hey, we're almost done with the 150 years, if you're wondering. He sets out to rebuild the wall and lead the people. And the people catch that vision. I'm sure that wasn't a real hard vision to cast because, you know, the people were tired of being beat up and bullied. And so he cast that vision and he begins to build the wall. They begin to work on the wall. And brick by brick, the wall begins to come up out of the ground and begins to stretch out. And they begin to work on that wall just over and over. And I'm sure there were some in the surrounding villages who walked by, there they go again. You know, they're trying to build that wall again. They'll never get that wall built. You know, and there, they'll get it up. They'll quit. And every day they passed, a few more bricks on the wall. A few more bricks on the wall. Wall kept getting taller. Wall kept getting longer. They were getting to get concerned because they said, hey, they're going to build a wall around our playground. You know, we're not going to be able to go in and pick their corn. We're not going to be able to go in and run over their city. And so they begin to get a little bit concerned. They're threatened. Listen, they were concerned that the Jews would build an army. Those kind of things. And they're beginning to get a little, you know, hey, they're getting a little bit arrogant. They're getting a little bit proud because they've got their wall going up. And listen, this is bad news. And so they decide, this is what we'll do. We'll send spies into the city. And so they sent spies into Jerusalem. And those spies went in, and their job was simply to start rumors. The wall leaks, the wall falls, Nehemiah's going to bail out. You know, whatever. Let's just start some rumors. You know, same thing, you know, you want to destroy it without knocking down the wall, just get the people bickering back and forth at each other. And so they go in and they do this, and you know, and that doesn't work. The people just keep right on, brick by brick, brick by brick, the wall's being built. So they say, listen, that didn't work. We're going to have to get a little more drastic. And so they arm some men. They get some people and give them armor and arm them and say, go get them. Knock them off the wall. We've got to stop this wall from being built. Well, Nehemiah sees them coming. And so Nehemiah pulls part of his men down off the wall. He arms his men. And he says, come on, you know, cross that line, you know. And he leaves some building and some guarding. And so that doesn't work. And so they're kind of getting desperate now. They don't know what they're going to do. And so no matter what they tried, brick by brick, the walls just kept growing. They're to the point now, when we get to Nehemiah 6, hey, I beat an hour and a half and covered 150. You know, didn't take an hour and a half. In Nehemiah 6, we're to the point where Nehemiah tells us pretty much the wall itself is complete. The wall is done. Only thing left to do is to put in the gates. The number one enemy, the main man, the leader of the opposition, was a man by the name of Sanballat. Now, Sanballat sees and recognizes we got a problem. They've almost got this wall done. When they put that gate in, it's all over but the crime. You know, they'll lock the gate and we won't be able to go into Jerusalem anymore. They'll begin to build their houses, their temples, their business. They'll get their economy built up. They'll get some money. And then they're going to come attack us. See, I'm imagining Sanballat was thinking kind of like this. We've been picking on them all these years. Payback's going to be rough. You know, they're going to come get us. And so he sees that everything is done except to build the gate. So he comes up with his next greatest idea. He's down to about plan D now. Well, plan D is his biggest, greatest idea yet. He sends a letter in Nehemiah chapter 6. He sends a letter, sends a messenger to Nehemiah and says, let's talk about this. Why don't you come down off the wall and you come out here into this village and let's you and I sit down and talk about this problem. Now, there's only one problem. Sanballat didn't want to talk. All Sanballat wanted to say was goodbye, Nehemiah. That was all. His plan was to get Nehemiah away from the wall, away from the other Jews, kill him, and then when they didn't have a leader, they'd give up on the wall. And it doesn't matter how big and how big tall your wall is. If your wall doesn't have gates, it's not much good. And so that's his last-ditch plan. And that's where we pick up in the story. We get to this place in Nehemiah chapter 6 where this one verse, this one statement that I hope, my prayer today, is it burns in your heart, your mind. I just about carve it on your forehead. I think this verse is this life-altering if you'll just take it into your heart and listen to what God is trying to say this morning. In Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 3, we pick up where Sanballat sent the messenger and said, come out and sit down and let's you and I talk together. And Nehemiah says this. I'm going to back up actually into verse 1 and give you the story. It says, now it came to pass when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arabian, and Tobiah and Geshem are just Sanballat's cronies, and the rest of our enemies heard that I had builded the wall and there was no breach. In other words, the wall was complete, though at the time I had not set up the doors upon the gates. The wall's done, all but the gates. Then Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, come let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me mischief. Now, I don't know what you're looking at. Either get you a Bible and open up Nehemiah. I'm going to give you a minute. You get your Bible, you open up to Nehemiah, stare up here at the screen. If the person beside of you is asleep, plant your elbow squarely between their second and third rib. Because I want you to read this. And not because I said it, God said it. It comes from God's Word. It's important. Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 3. Nehemiah gets the message. He gets it. I'd like for you to open your Bible so you know where it's at when you leave here. Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 3. Nehemiah gets the message and says, come and let's talk. Nehemiah says this in verse 3. I sent messengers unto them saying, I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Say that with me. I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down. One more time. I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down. I want that to burn in your heart. Because every person in this building is doing a great work. I don't know what that great work is. That great work may not even necessarily be spiritual, as some might consider spiritual. But every person here is doing a great work. And Nehemiah says, I am doing a work so great that I cannot leave my wall. I want to ask you this question this morning. What is your wall? What is the wall that God has called you to build? What is it that God has called you to do? What is the thing you're doing that is so great that you cannot, you should not leave it behind to chase something else? That you should not be distracted from what you're doing. There is something in your life, I promise you, some of you have already, you've already narrowed it down. You already know where I'm going. Yeah, there is something in your life this morning that is so important, that is so life-altering, that has the potential to affect others in such a way that you cannot come down over that wall and leave it. It is that important. You cannot leave it behind. You need to say like Nehemiah, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. It is that important to me. Nehemiah continues, if you read that in that verse, he goes on and look what he says. He says, I am doing a great work. Look what he says. He says, why should I leave it and come down to you? I'm doing a great work. Why should I leave it behind and mess with you? Why should I leave my wall? Why should I leave what God has sent me here to do and tinker around with you? I don't have time for trifling people like you. You're messing up my plan. You're messing up what God has. You're trying to mess up what God has for my life. I am doing a great work. I cannot come down. Why should I leave what I'm doing and mess with you? It's far too important what God has called me to do. If you keep reading, you'll see in verse 4 that Sanballat sends him. Look what it says in verse 4. I don't have that on the screen. You're going to have to look. Verse 4 says this. It says, yet they sent unto me 4 times after this sort. 4 more times they sent a message to Nehemiah and said, why don't you come and deal with us? Why don't you come and talk to us? But look what Nehemiah says every time. And I answered them after the same manner. Every time they said, Nehemiah, come down off the wall, Nehemiah turned around and said, I'm doing a great work. I cannot come down. Why should I leave my work and mess with you? Over and over again, they continue to try that. Why should I leave my work? Now, you know as well as the Bible's already told us, if Nehemiah would have left that wall, he'd have come down and met with Sanballat, he would have been killed on the spot. They would have took his life. Now, I don't know, but I'm willing to predict, I'm willing to prophesy in reverse, that had Nehemiah come down off of that wall, had Nehemiah been killed, the gates would have never been put in the wall. In fact, I would say that within just a few weeks, not only would the gates not be in the wall, but the enemies would have had the wall tore back down. Nehemiah knew that the work he was doing was so great that no one could do it but him. He was called to do that purpose. He was called. And I want you to know something. There are some walls in your life that no one can accomplish, no one can build but you. There are some walls that if you come down off of those walls, just like Nehemiah, they will destroy your life. They have the potential to ruin you. Had Nehemiah come down, he says, they were going to destroy me. They meant me harm. I want to tell you something this morning. There are some walls in your life that if you don't tend to them, they're going to ruin your life. It may be your marriage. If you don't tend to it, in a year, that wall is going to be falling down. If you don't take care of it, you need to get on that wall and you need to say, no matter what, I will not allow anything to destroy my home. It may be your work. You need to say, you know what? I've got to tend to my job or I'm going to be unemployed. I've got to take care of it. It may be, there are a lot of things that no one can take care of, but it may be your health. You need to say, you know what? I'm going to take care of this issue, or I'm not going to be any good to anybody. There are some things in your life, your relationship with your children, your relationship with your parents. Listen, that you need to get up on that wall and say, right now is the time to fix it. Right now. And I don't remember all the words of the song, but it's an old song that cats in the cradle. There it is. Come to me. Listen, you remember how that song went? The guy gets to the end of the song, and now he wants a relationship with his son, and his son says it's too late. I'll come by sooner or later. Listen, you need to get up on that wall, stay on that wall. There are some issues that if you don't work on, they're going to ruin you financially. If you don't get them under control, they're going to destroy you. You know, I heard about one guy who took his credit card, put it in a great big bowl of water, put it in the freezer and froze it. And he said, you know, that way the only way I can use it is to let it thaw out. You know, I can see some of you with a hammer and listen, there's some things out there that listen, and they're not, like I said, they're not all spiritual. Yeah, it may be that you need to work on your prayer life. It may be that you need a better knowledge of the Word of God. It may be that you need to improve your attendance at church. It may be that you need to work on tithing. I don't know what it is, but you do. It's already jumped up there in your mind. Your wall that needs tending to. Yeah, listen, there are issues out there that if you don't tend to them, nobody else will. You need to look at your children and say, you know what? I am doing a great work. I'm doing a great work, and I cannot come down off of this wall till I get my children raised. And listen, raised children anymore doesn't mean 18. You know, you may need to look at your grandchildren and say, you know what? I am doing a great work. And I cannot come down off of this wall till I give them every ounce of wisdom that I can. You know, some of you sitting here, you were fortunate enough, you were blessed enough to have the influence of godly grandparents and great-grandparents in your life. You need to climb up on that wall and be that kind of influence on your grandchildren, because I promise you, if you don't, no one else will. You know, I don't know what your wall may be. You know, there are all kinds of walls out there that you need to climb up and say, you know what? I refuse to allow anything to distract me. You know, you look around, and it may be your spouse. You may look at that thing you married to and say, I'm doing a great work, tough work, hard work, but I've got to stick to it. I refuse to be distracted. You know, listen, and I don't mean this could be the only way it could be, but it happens this way a lot of times. Men, you need to look at that lady that's however many years ago you promised to love, honor, and cherish till death do you part. And you need to understand that if you don't get your head up out of the dirt and quit spending all those hours at work, volunteering for every overtime project that comes along, every out-of-time project that comes along, somebody else going to be calling your wife honey. Now, I don't know how to make it any plainer than that. But you better get up on the wall and tend to what's important. You better make sure that some parents, we need to look at our children and say, you know what? I'm doing a great work here, and if I mess this up, they're going to put me in a lousy rest home. Think they won't. I am doing a great work, and I cannot leave it. Why should I come down and mess with you? Why should the work cease? Listen, the enemies keep on, they keep trying to do things. They go in and they start rumors, they continue. They try to get a rumor back to Artaxerxes that Nehemiah is going to rebel. Nehemiah says, I don't care. Why should the work cease while I mess with you? One of supposed Nehemiah's friends comes to him and says, they're going to kill you. You better go hide in the temple. He wasn't really Nehemiah's friend. He was a spy. Nehemiah says, I don't have time to hide in the temple. I got to get to the wall. Why should I cease working on the wall? Nehemiah gets down, if you look down in verse 15 of chapter 6, you'll see that kind of commitment. Nehemiah says in verse 15, in 52 days, the wall was complete. 52 days, the wall was complete. I challenge you to go back and read from Nehemiah chapter 1 to Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 15, and find one miracle of God. They never got up one morning and the angels had and built the wall. There was never an earthquake that swallowed up the enemies. There was never a lightning bolt. There were, you know, none of the other miracles that you find in the Bible. Never did God hold the sun still and give them extra daylight. Simply put, they got on that wall and they didn't come down till it was done. Look what happens. In verse 16, the Bible says this, "And it came to pass that when all our enemies heard thereof that the wall had been built in 52 days, the heathen about us saw these things, they were much cast down, for they perceived that this was the work of God." They got on the wall and they stayed on the wall. What's your wall? What does your wall look like? What is the thing that God is leading you to do? It may not be spiritual. Listen, it may not be tithing. It may be simply put, you know what? I got to focus on being the best husband I can be. I got to focus on being the best wife, the best mother, the best father I can possibly be. I've got to be that person. I've got to focus on that. Without any hesitation, I've got to focus on that. See, here's what some of you need to do. Rhonda, Malia, David, Kristen, stand up a minute. Caleb's in children's church, I guess. Or out rounding up my lunch. I am doing a great work. You may not think so, but I am doing a great work. And I can't come off the wall to mess with all this trivial stuff. God has given me a family, and I have got a great work to do. See, here's what hit me. Y'all can sit down. I'm done with you. Y'all, my illustration is complete. I'm going to tell you right here in front of everybody. I'll tell you what hit me. Most of y'all know, some of y'all in this boat with me. Most of y'all know I'm a diabetic. If I don't take care of myself physically, I will be no longer doing a great work. I'll be dead as a hammer. Dead men. Listen, you've never seen anybody be a little pregnant or a little dead. It just doesn't happen. And dead men don't do stuff. Dead men don't do great works unless you count pushing up daisies. I mean, it just doesn't happen. Dead men don't accomplish. Their work is done. Some of you this morning, it may be something physically you need to straighten out, or you're not going to be doing any more great work. Somebody else is going to be doing your great work. Someone else is going to be building your wall. Some of you, it may be, and listen, I'm not naive. I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus. I'm not naive. Listen, it may be drugs. It may be prescription drugs. Listen, you need to leave them alone. You need to get up on the wall and say, "I'm done, and I don't have time to mess with this." It may be alcohol. You need to leave it behind. I remember I heard Stanley say this. One of the things he said, "You know, here's the way to know you drink too much. If somebody ever comes up to you and says, 'I think you drink too much,' that's a good sign." You know, my opinion, here's how. If you drink, you drink too much. I believe the Bible teaches total abstinence. I believe it does. You know, it may be any kind of habit. It may be tobacco. You know, and you just need to set it down and say, "You know what? I'm going to get up on this wall and leave it behind." You say, "Jimmy, you don't have any of those habits. You don't know what you're talking about." Russell, can you get up on the wall and leave tobacco behind? Can you do it? Absolutely. Right there's a man that did it. You say, "You don't know about habits." Let me tell you something. When I tell you to give up some of those habits, telling you I'm going to watch what I eat, I put you in that boat any day, any time. Some of y'all sitting here, you know what I'm talking about. Listen, it may be a habit. It may be that you need to check yourself on the internet. You know, get up on the wall and say, "I'm leaving it behind." It may be spiritual. It may be that you need to start praying. It may be that you need to start attending church regularly. But whatever it is, you say, "I'm doing a great work and I cannot come down." Listen, it may be debt. Get a hold of your finances. It may be tithing. It may be, listen, there are some people that the best thing, the wall they need to do, they need to climb up on the wall and go to work. Get a job. I know we live in a give me society, but the best advice you could give to some people is get up, Get a job. You may not get to be the CEO. You may not get to be the president. You may have to wash and scrub a toilet, but get a job. I'm amazed at the people who come by here begging and say, I work for food. And I say, really? Hang on. And I'll call Bobby and I'll say, Bobby, you got any appliances down there that need scrubbing? Sure, send them down here. I've never had one show up down there yet. My favorite picture is the man standing out front holding a sign that says, we'll work for food. And he's standing under a McDonald's sign that says, now hiring. Get a job. Get up on that wall. You may need a second job to get out of your mess. Fix it. Get up on the wall. I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. What's your wall? Is it your health? Is it your finances? Is it your marriage? Listen, it may be an opposite kind of a relationship. There may be some relationships you need to get out of. That happens. There are some people that you run with, that you hang with, that bring you down. That you're worse because of your relationship with them. And listen, you know, they may be kin. They may be on the family tree. You need to kick that nut off the tree or something. You know, get away from them. If they bring you, some of you are looking around. If that person doesn't bring you closer to Christ, I'm not telling you to do away with them altogether. You might need to be the good influence on them. But you need to get up on the wall and say, you know what? I can't allow you to interfere with my relationship anymore. You know, it may be a hobby. Listen, if your hobby, you know, whatever it is, golf, whatever, fishing, whatever it is, if that hobby is interfering and coming between you and your spouse, get rid of it. Because here's what I want to ask you. You want to spend your golden retirement years with a box of golf balls or a slimy fish? Get up on the wall and say, you know what? This hobby's got to go. I don't have time for it. And be able to build the wall that God has called me to build. Relationships, some need repairing, some need removing. Whatever it is. I'm doing a great work so that I cannot come down. What's your wall? What's the thing in your life that God has spoke to you this morning and said, you know what? You need to get up on the wall. You need to make every determination. I'm not coming down. It may be spiritual, it may be physical, relational, financial, health. I don't know. I'm just throwing it up at the wall and see what sticks. I like them kind of sermons. A lot easier to preach. Just throw them out there. You figure out what to do with it. Maybe your children, your grandchildren. Whatever it is, I must stay on the wall. I cannot come down. Tell you what I've done. At great expense and labor, I asked Tommy to do this for me. Y'all didn't get that, did you? Great expense and labor. I asked Tommy to do this for me. Because when I tried to do it, the copier would not cooperate. I finally got a few made. But I've taken some cards. Really simple, really small. Great expense, as you can tell. And I've put that simple verse on that card. And I sent a message to them saying, I'm doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come down to you? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take them, and I worked so hard putting them to getting them made and cutting them apart that I'm just wore out. I'm going to ask Archie to spread these right along this altar. Because he's got to get up and lead the song anyway. Just ain't got to be neat. I know you. Just chunk them. You don't have to make five in each stack, or perfectly parallel or perpendicular or all that. Just chunk them. No, they don't. Just chunk them. Here's what I want to challenge you to do. You know what your wall is. You know what the thing that God has spoke to you this morning, said, you know what? Your number one priority, the thing you need to get a hold of, the thing you need to get your hands on, and you need to not let down. Maybe it's your health, maybe it's your finances, maybe it's your marriage, maybe it's your children, whatever it is. Some of you want to come, and you just simply want to make a commitment to say, I'm going to pick up one of those cards, I'm going to take it. Somebody while ago after the first service said, you know, give me one, I'm going to take it home, and I'm going to tape it on the door of the refrigerator. You know, to remind me every time I go to be careful what I eat. Listen, whatever it takes, you know. I told Carol Hancock I was going to tape one to her forehead so every time Don saw her, he'd look at her and say, I'm doing a great work. You know, if I come in here tonight and some of you husbands got one of these taped to your forehead, I'll know what your wife thinks of you. She's doing a great work. You just want to come by and pick one up and go back and sit down. That's fine. You want to come by and you want to pick one up and you want to stay here a minute and say, you know what, Lord? Man, this work, it's so great, I don't know how I'm going to get through it. You can have more than one. There's plenty of them, and I know the man that'll make more. He's good at it. I know the man that'll pass them out. Maybe you need a couple. Maybe you need to tape one to the refrigerator and one to the cabinet. You know, maybe you need to tape one on the hand so as you reach to put it in your mouth, you'll see it. Whatever. They're here. You might need to come and stay at this altar for a few minutes and say, Lord, help me. This work's so great, I can't do it by myself. I can't do it by myself. I just can't. Here's what I want to do. I'm going to ask Geraldine and Hertha if they'll come and just play. I want everybody to stand with your heads bowed for just a moment. You know what your wall is. You know what the thing is. I'm telling you, for me it was very simple. It was two things. It's my family and my health. Not necessarily in that order. Got to take care of both of them. I used to work for a man, I've told you about him. He worked, Marita, and it wasn't nothing for us to work 80, 90 hours a week. I remember hearing him say after 30 years of marriage, he went in, his kids were grown up, and he walked in one day and him and his wife sitting and talking and said, you know what, we realized after our kids got married and moved out, we didn't even know each other. He said, we wasn't mad, we didn't fight, we just decided to live apart. So we still like each other, we just didn't know each other. I let my job come between me and my wife and my relationship with her. If he'd have just built on that wall instead of working on Brian. What's your wall? The altar's open this morning. You need to come and kneel. You want to pray? You just want to pick up one, two, three of these cards and say, you know what? It matters to me. There's a wall in my life. This altar's open. You step out and you do what God's leading you to do right now.